Everyone's asleep. Everyone but me. And I can't help feel like I'm doing this all by myself.
That's trying to remind you actually that you're not by yourself, you're not the only one, and there's plenty of other people out there who think just the way you do, and in fact have been thinking that way for quite a long time. You wouldn't even aware of them. It's like taking part in an election where there's three candidates and everybody's going to vote for one or two of them and nobody's going to vote for the third one, and suddenly a landslide comes in for the third one. You're like, what? You thought the way I did as well? Amazing. Amazing. Today, we have two very special guests, a personal acquaintance of mine, who's basically one of the kind of straight-up, stand-up, very intelligent dudes that I've met in this country, who knows what he's talking about, by the name of Peter Ross Valentine from the Free Man Society in New Zealand. Peter, welcome to the program.
Hey, Vincent, how are you going?
I'm somewhat fabulous as my party line in general.
Excellent.
And we also have your friend and colleague, the illustrious, the fabulous, and kind of the founder, by trial of fire, in some cases kind of literally, Rob Menard.
Hey, how are you?
I'm really good, man. How are you today?
I don't know how good of a connection this is.
Well, it's not too bad, but you do have perhaps a little bit of a delay.
Okay, well, as long as you guys can hear me.
Just fine.
Yep, no, I can hear you, all good.
Sound check is working. Okay, well, I wanted to see if we could get both of you, one at a time, to sort of introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about who you are and what it is you do. Rob, could we start with you? Rob, are you there?
Yeah, I can barely understand. Fortunate.
Yeah, you're cutting out pretty badly there. If you have a landline or cell phone number that's available there, type it into the Skype chat here, and we'll probably be able to connect you onto that one. In the meantime,
I'm just reconnecting on Skype, or I can send you a phone number.
Send us a phone number. And that should work out. And you know what's interesting is just before I started off with this, there was also a automatic Skype update, which sort of changed everything and took an awful lot longer to get the Skype back online. And there's other stuff, like weird, spooky stuff going down. You know when the gremlins are in your computer? You know what I'm talking about here? It's one of those days. So not only have we got that problem here, but also Peter's Skype in New Zealand has also dropped out as well, and we're furiously trying to reconnect him. So this is one of those times in talk radio, ladies and gentlemen, when we are just plain not prepared for it. You need to blame yourself. And there's a little bit of feedback on Rob's line, so that means Rob's back with us on Skype.
I am back.
Yeah. Oh my goodness! But it's still a terrible connection. It's still a terrible connection. Okay, we have your phone number.
Yeah.
Down in the Sky chat there, so we should be able to be bringing you up on the phone momentarily. In the meantime, I did in fact want to sort of preface this thing, because the free man on the land thing is very difficult for a lot of people to understand, because it actually takes quite some telling. But I kind of pride myself on being able to sum up complicated situations in a very simplified way. And as far as I figure it, it's like this. You know, when you have your birthday, that's when you're born. Imagine that your mother is in fact a cow, and you are in fact a calf. And the government is, in fact, the farmer, and you are the livestock. And when you were born, they have a stock certificate, and it owns you, and it is your identity. It's not anything that was natural that was there that placed on you as a little cow at anything, was it? The universe didn't print out receipts telling that you were so many pounds and you would be a steer or a heifer. Nothing like that. But sure enough, that's how we treat people. And whenever you go get stopped by a cop, they're not asking you for your name as the person. They're asking for your name as the cow, as the piece of stock.
985.
Rob, we can hear you on the phone there. Okay. We have an incorrect number, apparently. Some kind of might be one number missing or something. And I'm just shutting down my video to see if we can get this done. But anyway, where was
I hear you much
cow in it? Is that starting to be a bit better for you, Rob? Can you hear me now?
Yeah, much better.
Okay. Well, we might have to do this one without the video today then.
Hello.
Okay, and we have Peter back as well. Gremlins have ceased.
I was wondering if it was yet this morning.
Yeah. Well, I always seem to think that the things that disrupt your computer are the same kind of gremlins that steal the socks out of your washing machine.
Get my take on it anyway.
Okay, well, introductions then first of all. I've already explained to the audience basically how a cow's born, and it's basically livestock, and they have a little bit of certificate for the weight of the cow and what have you. And it's not entirely dissimilar from a birth certificate and how we walk around all day long, simply as free-range livestock. And we get harvested in a financial way with bills, court dates, appearances, fines, and all manner of other things which apply only to companies in law. And there's no real law requiring any person to do it. So what they've done is when you're born as a piece of stock, they turn you into a company. They create this little artificial man called a straw man, and every time you walk around, you think that you are the person on that identification that has its name in all capital letters. Whenever you're writing your own name down, you put a capital at the front of your name, and then the rest is lowercase, isn't it? But not on your driver's license, not on your birth certificate. And you have a look. That's what they do with companies. Every company is limited liability, whatever, is in all capital letters. So just remember, you're a walking company, livestock, in order to be taxed. And that's the system. And what the free man movement is allegedly supposed to be doing is figuring out how to get yourself removed from that enslavement system. And Rob Menard, Peter Ross Valentine, I would say, would be two of the primary authorities that I'd refer to if this discussion was ever to be talked about by anybody. So, guys, very, very happy to have you here, finally. So, Rob, if you wouldn't mind telling us a little bit about who you are and what it is you do.
Okay, well, just to carry on with what you were saying there, part of it's really about personal empowerment more than anything else. And one of the things that I think is necessary to do is to avoid the belief that we're cattle or slaves or anything. It might appear like that, but there's also another perspective where because we are not capable of governing and taking care of ourselves, stepped in and are doing it for us just to take care of us as opposed to try to milk us or shear us, although it certainly seems like that from a certain perspective. And what it boils down to is our status in law and whether or not we are acting within a trust where we are their wards. They're the servants, the public servants, and we are a member of the public who's deciding to act legally in the position of a child, at which point our servants become our nannies. But the free man perspective is about recognizing that and then acting in a manner that allows us to claim that we are now the master over the servant and no longer in a position where we need to be its ward.
In other words, we don't need you anymore.
Yeah, thank you very much. But if you want to stick around, you'll be here as a chef and my servant and not as a babysitting nanny who's got their hands in a cookie jar and is apparently poisoning us so that we remain incontinent and incapable.
Yeah, and if that excuse doesn't rile them up, you could just say, hey, it's a recession. We've got to cut some jobs in the administration department.
Yeah, and it boils down to consent, Vinny, because they claim that they are the government because they enjoy the consent of the people. Now, if they rely upon the consent of the people, then the people have a right to withdraw that consent. And if the consent is gained on an individual basis, clearly they require the consent. So what the free man does is essentially remove the consent, which is necessary for representation and thus government over them to exist. Now, it doesn't mean that they are completely free to break the law, because if you go out harm and damage other people or use fraud or mischief in your contracts, they will be able to come in and govern you and take care of you because you're not doing it. So it's not rejection so much of the law, and a lot of people misrepresent us and they claim that we believe we're above the law, and that's not the case. What we refuse to believe is that the people in the government are above the law, and therefore they don't have the right to arbitrarily create statutes, impose it upon us, and extract our energy and our resources and our money and claim that we have no choice but to go along with it. I think our ability individually to simply revoke consent because we don't like what they're doing is the greatest tool we have at our disposal to peacefully ensure full and complete government accountability. If we have this ability, then there is no need to ever pick up violence or pick up guns and engage in violence. And if we don't, then that's our only option. Clearly, exactly. Individuals must have a right to just say no. If they point to people saying yes in order to justify their actions, then they have no right to ignore the people who are saying no.
The difficulty I have with government at the moment is it has a monopoly of force and an assumed, shall we say, consent of the people, and people have no idea what it is they're consenting to.
Yeah, and they oftentimes they don't even recognize that they are in fact consenting. And they, if there is mechanism in play, legal mechanisms which generate the consent or the appearance of consent, then there must be a mechanism available for us to reject it and to say, no, I don't consent. And they don't point that mechanism out very easily to people. And if they did, I'm sure that the majority of people would use it and they would lose their claim that they are operating with the consent and the will of the people.
And I think that this system has existed for a very long time, where it has the capacity to ensure that people follow its edict without the people even being aware that they have a choice in the matter.
Yeah, I agree as well. I mean, I think I see a lot of things, certain words and concepts which were attributed to Jesus Christ, I have used with great success. So clearly, whatever he was talking about, they were dealing with a system very, very similar to ours, where you had a certain class of people claiming a monopoly over the law and claiming a right to interpret that law for them and imposing essentially services upon them. And that's pretty much what we're facing now. Personally, I have a great deal of hope for the future. I think there's a mass awakening happening on a spiritual and a consciousness level. And people are starting to realize that we have a right to peace and abundance. And we have powers which we have the right to exercise. And if we do, we take away the power from these people who, acting in our names, are stealing our resources to build bombs and drop them on people on the other side of the planet.
Well, I think it's about independence, because the only way that, say, a bad person can have any power over you is if you're dependent on them. Like for example, a nasty boss or whatever, the only reason why you go away with what he says is because he can take your job off you. Or a very cruel guard at a prison or something like that. You do whatever crazy instructions he tells you because, you know, you'll spend a month in solitary confinement if you don't. You know, that kind of thing. If you're dependent on somebody else for your current state of being, you're not free.
I agree. And a big problem that I see, what I see happening is
because we are going to a break, this is a big problem, I agree. We'll have to cut off our conversation in mid-sentence and come right back to it, if we can remember what we were talking about on the other side, at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Ladies and gentlemen, you can also join us in the chat room there. So search Vinnie Eastwood chat room, should come up with it. We'll be right back with Rob Pinard and Peter Ross Valentine. Sack of rice. That's what a job is, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humour, you'll go friggin' nuts. It's on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. The show's 5 days a week at 5 p.m. Central Time in Texas, 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific. 5 days a week, you can tune on in the old US of A. And if you happen to be living in the Uber Kingdom, the UK, there is a show broadcasting on 11 p.m. at night till 1 a.m. So, you know, if you're like real tired in bed, but you can't sleep because you're worried about David Rockefeller flying through your windshield and biting into your throat and having the blood spurt all over the pillows and stuff like that, listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It'll lull you to sleep with its boringness and incredibly lame off-colour jokes. Now, my very special guests, Rob Menard and Peter Ross Valentine from Fremantle International. And I'm sorry, Rob, if you recall, what were we talking about before we went into the break then?
We were talking about the problems that the people in power are facing due to a growing consciousness that seems to be happening globally. The structures of control that they've built are simply not suitable for the kind of people that we're becoming. I'll give you an example. The other day, I was driving down the road, or let's just say I was driving down the road. I get stopped by this cop, and he says, "You appeared scared and nervous. Why is that?" I said, "Well, I suffer from colorophobia." He said, "Colorophobia, what's that?" I said, "Fear of clowns." He said, "I'm no clown." I said, "Well, you've got a costume like a clown." He said, "It's not a costume, it's a uniform." I said, "The only difference is the number of clowns wearing it." The problem that we have is a lot of them, when you ask them, they give you an order or a directive, and we are now getting to the point where we are asking, "Why should I do that?" And when they respond with, "Because I said so," it's simply no longer good enough for someone who is being awakened and invited to follow their own consciousness.
And, well, this dovetails with a political idea that I had. You know how the elections are a joke? So if you ever wanted to run for a party, it would have to be a joke, right? So you run as the clown party, and you stand up in front of the podium with all the other candidates and everything like that and say, "Everybody, vote for me. I'm way less corrupt than the rest of these clowns."
Yeah, it could be fun. I'll let you do that. I've got other things I'd rather do with what limited time I have on the planet.
Hey, there's a million and one ways to mess with the enemy, because there's a million and one ways to mess with us.
Yeah. What I noticed, like with the whole Occupy movement recently, Vinny, I was looking at that and I saw a whole diverse group of people all complaining about their own individual issues and problems. And it was like 100 different people, and I realized upon reflection on that there were really just five problems that we're all facing. And if we could address these five fundamental problems, that all of the other ones would then be far more addressable. It's kind of like what tools you carry in your toolkit when you go out to fix one big machine. You know what I mean? And I think the biggest problem that we're facing to a large degree, and this is hard to put out there, but people need to grow up. We're acting like children in how we allow ourselves to be divided, the bullshit that we fall for, and the fact that we don't seize our wealth and administrate our own affairs properly. I think that's one of the biggest issues that we have to face, and if we can do that, then the other ones would be very easy to address. And that is our form of representative form of government used by Canada in the Commonwealth, the parliamentary form, and even what you guys have down in the States. These things are essentially archaic. They're no longer functioning to represent our communities. We have tools of communication now, which we never had before 800 years ago. We have far more time. And because it is so archaic, it lends itself to being hijacked very readily by large corporations. And that's exactly what's happening. So we need to create a better form of government where it's more direct participatory democracy, where we can raise the issues, discuss them, develop remedies to them, and then present these and vote on them, and have the People's Congress decide these issues. And then that becomes the will of the people, and you could still have elections for public office, head of ministries and whatnot. But you would get more qualified people running for those specific offices, and they would still be bound to fulfill the will of the people. The third problem we have is our courts, obviously. Our courts are, I don't want to say corrupt, I would go closer with being hijacked. Because they allow fictions in court, if you want justice, you need truth. And the moment you have fictions in court, truth is running out the window and doing a three-point roll and is off in the bush. You don't get justice if you don't have truth, and you don't have truth if you start with fictions. We need people's courts where only people have a voice. And if anyone who wants to claim that they're justified in their actions because they're acting for the Crown and the right of the province of Ontario or the Crown or the state or IBM or whatever, they would have no fictional entity to hide behind and claim limited liability and a deep protection from their own actions. So we'd have a way of holding people personally accountable for their own actions. The fourth problem we have is our peace officers. We all saw what happened in G20. The police now are blindly taking orders. It's apparent that a police state is developing. Something very concerning was very recently, the police in the U.S. have been granted by Harper the power to cross the Canadian border if they're in pursuit of a Canadian or of anyone, and operate on Canadian soil, arresting people here. And that is a foot in the door that I simply, I don't like at all. I find that quite scary. So we need a force of peace officers drawn from the people, where we hire each other to preserve and maintain the public peace. So we are all, in fact, peace officers, and we can act in a manner that holds the cops now accountable to the law, so that we can, in fact, record them and arrest them if necessary. The final thing, of course, is money. The way we put our money into circulation is, to me, the most ludicrous thing imaginable. It's impossible to pay back the debt when all the money is in circulation, has interest attached. There's simply no way to pay it off. And through a series of expansion and contraction of the money supply, you end up with one party owning all the real wealth when they brought absolutely nothing to the table, except for the means of exchange that we need to engage in commercial transactions and exchanges. And the biggest problem with our money is that we ask it to form to fulfill two roles. One is as a medium of exchange, and the other one as a store of wealth. And there are psychopaths out there who seem to think they need billions and billions of dollars. There's no limit to the amount of money they want. They hoard it. That restricts our ability to engage in these trades and transactions. So if we could find a way to fix and address those five things, pretty much all of the problems that we're facing would become quite manageable, I believe.
And what's funny is that all those problems seems like they're insane problems. Like, why do those problems even exist?
Well, I think we're dealing a lot with history. I mean, when you look at our form of government, it was a good thing. It got us to a certain point. But it's kind of like an egg. An egg forms a very strong protective shell over a developing embryo. But there comes a point in time where the chick must bust out of that or it dies. And I think our form of government was that egg, and its time has simply come. We can't trust anyone to represent us anymore. We know that as soon as we do, they become the, pardon the language, corporate whores. They're serving the interest of these corporations. There's a revolving door between them and the regulatory agencies, which are supposed to regulate them. We know there's a problem with all of that. We have no say. And the idea of electing someone every 4 years when we have a method of communication now which never existed back then. I mean, since then, we had telegraphs, for Christ's sake. Our form of government hasn't changed in hundreds and hundreds of years. That's the big problem, I think. That's one of the five big problems. And it's so entirely possible now.
Technology's developing, society's developing, but government isn't?
Yeah, to a large degree, it's not. If you want to call ourselves a society, then it's a number of people joined by mutual consent to deliberate, determine, and act for a common goal. Our method of determining and deliberating is not even to do that, but to assign that duty to someone else and then give them that power over 4 years, and we've got the technology and the ability now to do that ourselves. We simply do not have the requirement anymore to elect someone every 4 years. It was clearly the case just 200-300 years ago, 100 years ago, even 20 years ago, that was probably the case. But we now have internet, we now have the ability to discuss and determine these things directly and on our own, and to make these decisions. And I believe that this is what's necessary, and because otherwise, what, you're going to get another party and they get in power and it's all just the same. Nobody really buys it anymore. I mean, nobody really thinks that they're going to elect someone and fix the problem, or that they're even going to keep their promises. You can't trust these people. Some people have tried bringing charges against some politicians for not keeping their promises, and the judge tossed it out and said anyone who believes a politician running for office deserves the politician they get. So
that's similar to the law here in New Zealand. It's actually legal for a politician to knowingly misrepresent their policies to the public in an election year. Or any year.
Why do we give these people such enormous power over our lives and our resources when we see the result of that is them getting in bed with corporate powers and interests and claiming ostensibly to do it for our behalf, but then not even listening or following the will of the people? When it comes to any basic thing from, say, the decriminalization of marijuana, fracking for natural gas, taxation levels, how we should be putting money in circulation, all of these things should be decided by the people if we have that technology and availability and ability, and we now certainly have that. And you don't see any of these politicians advocating something that says, oh, yeah, now let's make my job obsolete.
Well, in fact, that's what I find my job is as a media commentator, is to make my job obsolete, encourage everybody else to do their own radio shows, their own YouTube channels, so eventually I won't be needed anymore and I can relax. What I think these politicians do is they just don't like the idea of retiring and doing something useful in their spare time or anything like that. You know, they don't know what to do with freedom, so they want to take it away from all of us so that we can't do anything with it either.
I think a lot of them come to it with a very good heart and good goals, and they want to try to help, and I've met a couple who seem very genuine and very caring and, public service oriented. However, I've also seen too much of these people getting into a positions of power and then doing things which were clearly against the will of the public, clearly not in our best interest, and acting like now they have the power, it doesn't matter. And in that 4 years, they can do a horrendous amount of damage and change to the country, which could be potentially irreparable, and they can make deals and agreements with foreign powers that, sell the house out from under us, lock, stock, and barrel. So I don't agree with the concept of asking voting for someone to represent my wishes in the parliament when we should be having a people's congress, a people's parliament, where we all have a say, we all have a voice, we all have a means of discussing it, deliberating it, determining it, and then acting on it.
Yeah. I mean, when am I able to go into Parliament and actually represent myself and have any form of authority? At best, I can talk to a bunch of other people's misrepresentatives, as Karen Quintostado says, and hope that they listen.
Yeah, and I think it's good luck even getting their ear. I mean, there was a time when I tried calling every MP and every MLA that I could, and I didn't speak to one of them except for one, and he answered his own phone, and that was Chuck Cadman. I don't know if you're aware of him, but he was probably one of the most sincere and genuine politicians to ever stand in Parliament, and unfortunately, we lost him very early when he was quite young, but he answered his own phone. I explained the free man perspective to him, and he agreed that it was a lawful tool for ensuring government accountability. And if all of them were of his character, I would have faith and hope in that institution. But I know they're not, and I know that...
Well, if all of those people had that faith and character, you wouldn't have a job, mate.
Well, thank God. I would have a job. I'd be doing something.
Thank God I'd have a job.
Yeah.
Who needs a job?
I would be doing something fun to do.
Well, see, it's amazing, and I think that something always happens to you to get you into an activism motif or whatever. You know, it's either you're raised by your parents and they've got some kind of career that sort of makes it inevitable that you'll grow into
question
it. And other times, something real bad just happens to you, and you have to spend a lot of time trying to make sure it doesn't happen to other people. We'll be right back after the break with Rob Menard and Peter Ross Valentine. gentlemen. Listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. The sexiest 2 hours in talk radio, especially when we have Rob Menard on the show. Welcome back, guys.
Thank you.
Hey,
now, dig this. Is there a time in history where people have actually been free, like properly free, and not been under threat for any period of time?
I don't know. I've only been alive a short time, and anything I could tell you would just be someone else's opinion on history.
Mm.
I imagine I've seen pictures of tribal cultures where they appear quite free and happy and no taxation and no jails, no courts. And I think that we're certainly in a position to do so, even if it's never happened in history before.
What if we have a technologically advanced tribal culture?
Yeah, well, I'd like to live on Gilligan's Island, but with the internet.
Yeah. See, being trapped anywhere ain't that bad if you've got constant, steady flow of communications and access to different knowledge. It's like you don't have to travel the world anymore in order to see it.
Yeah.
Very true.
I agree.
As long as you're not looking at one source.
So I think this means that freedom in and of itself is basically hemmed right on the backbone of freedom of information, because without that, you don't have freedom at all.
Well, actually, let me just jump in there. Freedom of information has always been there, Vincent. It's just the fact that most people are most very apathetic towards it and like to be entertained most of the time. So they choose already, before they go and look for the information, to accept one source of information as truth. And I guess what we're trying to do is try and open people's minds to start questioning everything and looking for different sources, whether you're here in New Zealand, it's just Fairfax Media, which is Reuters, it's just one source, it's the same stuff. And the internet is obviously a great tool, but I mean, before the internet, there were books. And you could read other people's opinions and history, witnessings of events, you know, just on a more analog basis, you know. But what we need to do is look at the source of the information and then go out and try and cross-reference that and you know, does it make sense? You know, ask more questions. That's what we're trying to sort of wake people up to. And the fact that, you know, like jurisdiction, you know, how do people have power over you? Well, it's all words. And I guess another thing what we're trying to do is to get people to start questioning the meanings of these words and what they mean when a police officer, for example, says something. Well, why does he have power over you? And most of the time, they don't. They'll pull you over on the side of the road and do a checkpoint, and they'll say, hey, do me a favor and pull over there and we'll search you. And the reason why he says do me a favor is because he doesn't have authority over you. And when you do him a favor, then you're doing him a favor. You've just followed an order that you didn't even have to do. It wasn't even an order. And I guess we're trying to, again, get people to question everything, you know, politely. They're not the enemy. They're more of an adversary. It's like a game of chess.
You know what this does? It reminds me of the scene in Aladdin where the genie's telling him he's only got 3 wishes. And Aladdin's like, oh, yeah, whatever. He probably can't even get us out of this cave. And then the genie gets so angry that he shoots them out of the cave and goes, ha, that's one of your wishes gone. And he goes, but I never actually wished to get out of the cave. You did that on your own.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we're doing with cops when we do them a favor, is we're letting an angry genie out of the bottle.
Yeah, and once you're out, don't poke the genie. You know, there's a whole world out there. Once you're out of this cage or imaginary world, yeah, there's a whole world out there. A lot of people forget that. They think they're free, and then they start rattling the cage and find themselves back inside again.
I think to a large degree, though, there is no genie. In the end, all it is are human beings. And the problem I have with the structure so much now is these people engage in actions, and they justify these actions by claiming it's the will of a non-existent entity. They might as well claim Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny got together and gave them permission to dress up in their costume and go around with their gun, committing extortion, intimidation, mischief, fraud, and theft. And we let them get away with it because we share this delusion that this non-existent entity has this power and authority. In the end, it's just people just using words. And once you start
I don't know. I don't think they just use words, though, because I'm looking at a picture right here from Highway 82 in Wichita Falls, Texas, with a light armored tank with six wheels and a gun turret pulling over a guy for speeding. It got blue flashing and red flashing lights on it, too.
Yeah, I saw that. My point is, though, Vinny, they justify their actions, and they claim that you could not do the same thing, and they do this with their words, and they claim that these words are the will of a non-existent entity. In Canada, they'll call it the crown and the right of the province of whatever, or the crown and the right of Canada, and they claim that this is the crown's will. And yet, this thing doesn't exist. It's a fictional entity. It exists in their minds the exact same way Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny exists in the minds of children. It's the exact same mindset. And once you start looking past this...
I just want to jump in there. Sorry.
Yeah, Rob. Go ahead. Go ahead, Peter.
Well, no, you just kept finish what you're saying there, but I just wanted to jump in there about the what you call a peace officer, which I guess all Americans and Canadians understand, but for New Zealand Australians and people in the Uber Kingdom up north, they call them police constables, or they used to. The office of constable was an elected office, like all offices, you know. You want to be in the council, you're holding an office, it's a public office, it's an elected office. And traditionally, what Rob is talking about, where we need more peace officers on the road and in the communities, people that we elect, because that is the office of constable. We would elect these people in, and if they messed up, then they wouldn't get re-elected. They'd be out, and somebody else would be in. And this is the problem, is we have now today, is the police constable is no longer the
police. And I find it an ironic name, because they're not very stable, but they are a bit of the other thing.
What do you mean?
Oh.
Dude.
Yeah, to a large degree, one of the things that I see is that I can see a lot of division where there's really no need for it. And there's a lot of division between the public and the police. I don't think they're much happier with it. Maybe there's a growing percentage of them that are using more steroids and they are more in it for the adrenaline rush and the power. But certainly it's always been a very noble profession. And I think a lot of them wish that it was more noble. And we need to give them the power to be able to say no to unlawful orders. We have to teach them how to distinguish between these and then have the power and to do that and protect them when they're at it. I think it's very sad that we have a situation where lawyers are making the rules, which the cops enforce, and then they instruct us not to talk to the cops, and they the cops to lie to us. On a fundamental level, that's a divide and conquer mechanism that really, I think we should be talking to the cops and saying, hey, maybe the problem here isn't the free men, it isn't the police, it's these lawyers and the people in government and the courts and the rules that they're making. Because the body of words that we are expected to know and struggle under is simply ludicrous. It should be very simple. It should be the kind of thing that you can understand in grade 3.
Yeah. I mean, I looked at it like this way. All laws, everything, it doesn't matter whether you're talking about gay marriage or anything like that. You know, somebody comes up to me, Vinny, what do you think about this bunch of people or this bunch of laws or anything like that? Well, is it hurting anybody? No. Is it damaging anybody's stuff, stealing any of their crap, you know, causing loss of any kind? No. Well, then it's none of my freaking business.
Yeah,
exactly. There's no crime.
Yeah, but and the problem that we have is we have armed people walking around thinking they are empowered to restrict our freedoms and our actions, which are non-harmful or which are not harmful and which are not damaging. They don't offend. And yet they claim that we are harming this non-existent entity that they claim to be enforcing the policies of. And to me, if we don't have the right to say no to that, then they are the ones who have abandoned the law. They're the ones who are thinking that they're above the law, claiming that they can create statutes and apply them to us without consent and claim that it supersedes common law. It only supersedes common law with the consent of the parties. It's not one arbitrary thing that one party can just say, oh, I've just made a statute, and without your consent, I'm imposing this upon you.
Yeah, it depends on the situation and the person in the situation. For instance, if you've got a completely irresponsible person who runs into you onto the side of the highway and then tries to get away or something, and a policeman comes along and stops that person, that's an appropriate use of force. However, if you've got somebody who slams into somebody, just a slight fender bender to a say an unmarked police car, and it was just an accident or something like that, and then the police officer calls another 8 vehicles to deal with this fender bender of somebody who is perfectly responsible and just had a little bit of an accident, happened to be an undercover police car. This happened to my girlfriend's dad.
Yeah, they do that a lot. That's what I've noticed, which scares me. Well, not scares me, but which concerns me, is they are employing intimidation tactics and unreasonable force well before trying to employ any reasonable discussion or negotiation or just talking like human being to human being. They come out intimidating outfits, and their costumes is all it is. I mean, there's a purpose behind them far beyond simple protection of themselves. It's clearly meant to intimidate. It's clearly meant to cause fear. And our servants shouldn't be causing fear in us if they are, in fact, serving us.
Indeed, because fear stops you from thinking, and you certainly don't want a bunch of unthinking people in your population blindly obeying things, because then they might obey an order from the government to exterminate the other 50% of people that they don't like. You're listening to the Billy Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Rob Menard and Peter Valentine are my guests, and we'll be right back after the break at AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Show the fastest 2 hours in talk radio with my very special guest, and Rob, you have a lot of pull, man. I've got to say, a lot of people love you and want to listen to you. The chat room is like 2 to 3 times the amount of people we've got. We've got huge amounts of people on the audio streams from a number of different countries tuning in. It's a fiesta out there, and I'm just so grateful that somebody of your caliber is willing to donate some of your valuable time to come on with us, man. Really appreciate it. And Peter, you too, man, because I remember a couple of weeks ago we were talking and you were kind of at sort of burnout stage. You know when you're active for a long time and sort of you don't get any time off and it starts to weigh on you a little bit and you think, man, is being free worth it? And I think that's what you said to me.
Oh, mate, no, totally. It was. It's been a long, long but very interesting and enlightening journey. And something interesting that I saw on Facebook, which is one of my most unfavorite websites, but I've kind of found myself sucked in like everybody else, was a quote by a British comedian who was like saying, if ignorance is bliss, why aren't there more happy people out there, right? Which is true. And I believe a lot of people are waking up and they don't want to wake up and they're seeing stuff that normally they wouldn't be seeing. It's like, say, somebody says, hey, I've just bought myself a new type of car, and then suddenly all you see is that car everywhere, although you hadn't seen it before. When you notice something, it's really hard to switch off. And I felt like I was kind of pissing in the wind as well, if you know what I mean. Excuse the word there, but sometimes when you're trying to do something and invest so much time into something, and it just doesn't look like it's getting anywhere. But it is. We're getting so many amazing results in what we're doing, and I was just having a pretty low moment then, which is good. You know, you got to go. You can only go up as far as you've been down. So everybody who's feeling pretty down, well, there's only one way to go, and that's up. You know. So once you're there, it's going to be bloody awesome.
Yeah.
Right, so keep positive, everybody. Yeah, there is light at the end of the tunnel. Just don't follow the light. Sorry. Anyway.
Sometimes you find out that the light at the end of the tunnel is actually a freight train.
Yeah. True. Dodge it. Yeah, no, it's funny. It's all about words, and if you put a great big dollar sign in front of it, that becomes swords, which is, money, man. The we've got to do something about the money and the fact that our governments are what you call a de facto government, not a de jure government, and people don't even know the difference. And you know, they don't understand the difference between legal and lawful, you know. It's like, oh, yeah, it's all the same, you know, because I'm not thinking, you know, because I've been taught not to think. Because it starts at school, you know, your kids, they're full of questions. They're born into this world, and it's an amazing world, and they're full of questions. And they go to school, and the first thing they do is they ask questions, and the teacher says, don't ask such stupid questions, you know, and repeat after me. And by the time kids leave school, they think they know it all because they've been drummed into them this bullshit that they call education, which is basically breeding, it's creating slaves.
And again, with the FCC regulations, you have to say the word BS. But you're right. After school, you come out, and instead of, you think you know it all, you think you know what's legal and lawful, but in fact, what you think is legal and lawful is actually just evil and awful.
Yes. Well, I have a lawful wife, but she's not my legal wife. We've been together 11, 12 years. Actually, going back to police, I met my partner. She was flatting in a house which was owned by a copper in England, and he was a decent guy. You know, he didn't really, he seemed all right. He didn't crap on his own doorstep, put it that way, which I thought was quite admirable. But he kicked in a few other people's doors. But one of his jobs was, because it was central England, was he would with a lot of others of his armed buddies, they'd go around to the football matches and stop, you know, stand in front of the crowd, you know, as they do in England. Everybody's heard of the infamous soccer fans in England. They're probably the most riotous in the world, and there's always a good punch-up. So these guys, the cops, they're told to face the crowd during the game, but they don't. And this guy, this guy who I won't name because you might be listening in and it's not fair, really, but he turned down quite a few promotions within his local police force because he would have then been promoted, he would have had more money, but he wouldn't be able to go to the football matches. And he was a big soccer fan. And it was his highlight of his job. He was being paid, you know, 15, 17 grand a year, which wasn't brilliant, you know, but it was an all right sort of wage. But he gets paid to go and watch soccer matches and then go and have a fight afterwards because it was guaranteed there'd be a fight. And the cops, they're no longer there to keep the peace. They actually contribute a lot of the time to what's going on because, you know, they egg the crowd on. They might even have people in the crowd just to create the, you know, what the Americans might call a false flag or red flag incident, you know, whereby, you know, it started by them. And everybody in England would remember the 1960s game, 66-60, whatever it was, Germany against England. 70,000 people in Wembley, and there was one policeman on one horse holding the entire crowd back, right? And that was only, you know, England's only won the World Cup twice, so that's only the last before last World Cup.
That guy must have been descended from William Wallace or something.
Oh, he was. He had bolts of lightning coming out of his demi-orbs.
7 foot tall, kills men by the hundreds.
Totally, yeah. Arms like Arnold Schwarzenegger, you know? Massive.
And eyes, you know? Red like the fires of hell.
Speaking of Arnie, his key phrase, which was, I'll be back, has changed to, I feel old.
Yeah, I thought his name was I.B. Battening.
His father, actually, was a Gestapo Nazi, I think. His stepfather.
Yeah, sounds about right. In fact, he wears a skull belt buckle when he, like an SS skull and crossbones belt buckle. He wears it to, like, his political rallies sometimes.
Yeah, that's what I mean. His stepdad was right in there. Right in there. But
I would have I'm sorry, Rob, we kind of cut through your response there. You were kind of replying to what I said to you earlier. I'm sorry.
Which was?
About how much pull you have and how much people globally kind of like tune in to listen to you.
Yeah, I think that's because I'm incredibly intelligent and very, very funny. And my humility, too. That's a big part of it.
He has fruit bats.
No, yeah. I feel honored about that. I think it comes with a certain amount of responsibility, and I hope one of the things that I like to speak about is the fact that I realized very early in this path that my enemies were not the police, were not the courts, were not the government so much as it was the fear and the anger and the shame in my own heart. And that part of this journey involves replacing those with love, compassion, and peace. And that if we are going to win this and create a better world for our ancestors, for our children, we're going to have to rely on that. There's no sense trying to fight these people without those. We will definitely lose.
Yeah, it's like I keep saying to people, it doesn't matter what part of the world you're in or what your field of interest in, you can usually help somebody else somewhere in another field, in another country, just by putting them in contact with another person or doing one little thing for them or whatever. And I look at it like this, we all have to help each other in every way we can. Otherwise, we're all going to be really, really fracked in every possible way we can be, you know. We ride together, we die together, we stand together, or we hang separate, whatever kind of thing that you want to talk about. And I think it stems from taking responsibility, and that's where your power comes from. Power doesn't come with responsibility. Once you take responsibility, that's when people start to give you the power that responsibility has endowed with you. For instance, the power to be able to bring people in and listen to you is born out of the sheer fact that you went out and took responsibility for the fact that few people were addressing the legal and lawful and evil and awful issues within society. And because you took responsibility for it, you've now been endowed with this power. Right? And because you've been endowed with the power as well, then you also have to recognize that, oh my God, now there's even more responsibility. Because although that responsibility wasn't mine in the first place, it is now.
Yeah, I agree. And the thing is, the word responsibility, actually, you can break that down into responsibility. So it is generally an ability to respond. And what we get tested on is our ability to respond, our responsibility level. And whether or not we do, in fact, do it with a sufficient amount of compassion for our fellow man, truthfulness, and inherent love in our spirit. And once you start demonstrating that to these people who believe that they have power over you, their ability to point to the fictions to justify their actions starts seeming ludicrous even to them. And it's at that point when you start finding that there's much less obstacles in your course than there would be if you go through life angry and violent and fearful and shameful.
Now, speaking of being shameful, I kind of refer to myself. I know maybe you can kind of counsel me on this, if you may, Rob. But I've been thinking about the New Zealand situation, how very few alternative media outlets we have here, and how tiny I am by comparison to, like, most of the rest of the world's big truth activists, and me being the biggest here in New Zealand. Now, I could be proud that I'm the one kind of doing a huge amount of work and getting all the content out there, but in truth, I'm actually ashamed that there's 4 million Kiwis in this country, 5 million Kiwis on Earth total, you know, about a fifth of our population lives overseas. And it's me, and it's like, there's got to be somebody better than me. But apparently there isn't. And it's shameful.
Actually, you're the man of the time. You're the man of the time. I've got to jump in there, Vincent. You are the man of the time here in New Zealand, and I guess there can only be one. And again, the most sheeple. Don't forget it. Well, there are so many fences. This is another big low point. There's so many people sitting on the fence, going, "Oh well, you know, prove it." And it's like, well, have you ever actually asked for proof that these words that they have power over you actually mean what you think they are? And you're asking me for proof. You know, you can't spoon feed some people, and that's a problem I guess we find with a lot of things out there. And what Rob was saying with the responsibility, the ability to respond, this is again, you know, people listen to Rob, and I stand back in awe at some of the stuff he says. It's taken me years to grasp the meanings of these words. To understand means to stand under. To, you know, there's a whole load of things I suddenly step back. Choose different words because the words that I would normally use mean totally different things, and that's magic. It's the oldest form of magic out there, which is word magic. When people say one thing and they get you to act,
That's why they call it spelling. And also, yeah. have you noticed in movies how they get all the actors that are going to believe this that are going to make everybody believe this fantasy? They call it casting.
Oh, casting! What, the casting catch?
Yeah, you're casting like the cast, as in the cast and crew. The cast are the ones who kind of embody the illusion and sell it to people. So they're like casting a spell.
True. I work in the film industry, and it's kind of weird. People say that the film industry is really evil, and yeah, I suppose there's some pretty sinister people in that industry, but there's some pretty good people in there as well. You know. And like any industries or any country, you know, you can't go, oh, look, all the Germans are all Nazis and all the Jews are bad. Well, that's not true because, you know, or you're an anti-Semite. And it's like, well, do you know what that means? You know, because a Semite is an Arab and you might be saying something derogatory towards Zionists, which aren't particularly always Jews. They're sometimes some Christian Zionists and there's some atheists.
I thought a Semite was just half the size of a regular dust mite.
Exactly. And the when you there's a loaf of bread, okay, and you see some weevils eating the bread, and there's a big weevil, little weevil. Which weevil do you choose? Well, always the lesser of two weevils.
Oh, we seem to be losing you a little bit there, Peter.
It's okay. It probably wasn't that funny.
I think it's the universe saving your listeners from his bad jokes.
Yeah, that was actually the whole...
I thought I was supposed to be saving the listeners from his FCC violating mouth.
No, I'm going to have the comedy club after me.
Oh, yeah. Well, in fact, speaking of the comedy club, the real Vinnie Eastwood show actually happens after the broadcast. It'll be starting in about maybe 45 minutes or so. I don't know if you guys are keen to hang on for an extra 15 minutes after the show just to have a quick conversation with the listeners who come in through Skype or something like that, but sometimes the conversations can go up to 5 hours. It's like the real show. And you get to talk to people from all over the world and just kind of share your thoughts and what have you. It's a whole lot of fun. So we'll be coming right back after the break with Peter Ross Valentine and Rob Menard, ladies and gentlemen. You can join us in the chat room at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. So if you just basically run a Google search or any other CIA Tracebook notification, search Vinny Eastwood chat room, should be able to find it. It'll be pretty easy. We'll be right back.
Come gather around, people, wherever you roam, and admit that the waters around you have grown, and accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone. For the times, they are a-changing.
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinny Eastwood Show. Broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com on AMFM stations all across America and around the world. And just what's a nigger sense of the world? My very special guests, Rob Menard from Canada and Peter Ross Valentine from New Zealand, both members of the World Freeman Society. And is the website freemansociety.org? Or is
worldfreemansociety.org.
Yeah. And you actually, I also want to make sure that this show is a platform for people to perhaps raise money. If there are listeners out there who really support Rob and the work that he's doing, or any of the other guests that comes on the show, all the people in various movements need financial support, because they can be a heck of a lot more effective at what they're doing, exposing scumbaggery, freeing people from the chains of slovenly scum like David Rockefeller and Barack Obama and goodness knows what other police state measures are going down. They do it a heck of a lot faster, more effectively, and it looks way cooler if there is a little bit of support from the people who watch the videos and listen to the radio shows and stuff like that. You know, get involved, because imagine this, you will now be responsible in part for the works of that activist continuing, and that's a great feeling.
I agree wholeheartedly. You know, I mean, I don't charge. We don't charge money for the information. We put it out there, and then we make it also available on our websites in order to support after you've received the information, if you want us to print it up and whatnot. And I am looking at engaging in an action in court, which does require some funds. And my computer just died. So if there's anyone out there who cares about me having my Mac die on me, I'm looking to get that refurbished, and we are set up to funnel some revenue to me for that purpose and for the action. And the other thing I'd like to point out is the action I'm looking at doing, what really rang my bell and woke me up that the time to act is now, was the announcement that Harper is allowing U.S. cops across the border into Canada if they're in hot pursuit of a fugitive. And although they're claiming right now that it's for people coming as smugglers and criminals and whatnot, that's what they would have to do if they intended martial law and they wanted to shut down your country. They would have to shut off your lines of escape, and that's what they're preemptively doing, I think. And it is simply an affront against our sovereignty, which is unacceptable. And what I'm looking for, we've got an email for it. It's no U.S. cops in Canada is why we chose this, but it's NUSCIC@gmail.com. And what we're looking for are letters from people across Canada in support of our action, and donations through PayPal at that account as well, if possible. And what we're looking to do is go into court and get an injunction barring them from doing that. And then we're seeking a judicial determination on whether or not, it's a very simple question, are the police bound by the Criminal Code of Canada or are they above the law? And we want the court to recognize that they are in fact bound by the Criminal Code of Canada. And then if once they rule in our favor, then we have one course of action available to us. If they fail to rule in our favor, we have a different course of action available to us. But I'm looking to do something along that lines. The money that, if excess money is raised, I mean, I'd love to have 10,000 people across Canada and across the U.S. all write in and sign in and say, no, we're against this on both sides. This is against the public interest. It is against our will. And also, I mean, anyone can just sign a petition. It has very little force in court, an email. But once you start throwing, you know, $10 each, then I have the funds necessary to maybe hire some of the more brilliant minds out there, some good lawyers who understand the danger that this poses to Canada and really put a stop to it. The excess money would be used for the Canadian Common Core of Peace Officers, where individual citizens and individual freemen hire each other under contract to preserve and maintain the public peace. They are then granted the protection and status of a peace officer. It's being recognized now by the police officers and by the courts, and it gives us a position where we can now deal with rogue police officers, empower them to say no to unlawful actions. And I see this issue about the U.S. cops crossing the border. I think it's the kind of thing which should join and group together the police, the freemen, the citizens, the native groups. We should all join together on this and say no, because it's not to anyone's benefit. The argument saying that they need it is completely specious. You can't claim that you have to have the power to cross the border and arrest the people in Canada because our cops are incapable of doing it. I mean, for the police to support that position is for them to admit incompetency and being incapable of using a radio, for Pete's sake. I mean, Marconi fixed that problem 100 years ago. And we don't need them crossing the border to effect arrests. If the problem is so big that that is even contemplated, then it's big enough to justify a larger budget for the police, give them the tools and the equipment and the radios they need to intercept these people and be there when they cross the border. There's no reason for it. The only reason I can see is the desire to set up a police state and shut down a lines of escape. And Canada has historically been a place for people running from the policies of the U.S. to escape to. My great-grandfather helped build a tunnel under the Detroit River to allow slaves to escape. And if they are planning, which seems likely, some sort of martial law, some sort of breakdown of the financial system leading to martial law, you're going to have a lot of people seeking escape, and they are looking for the right to cross the borders and come and get them. And it just can't be allowed.
Well, I think it's like this. You need a some kind of a road sign or something like that. You know, in fact, I was looking through your Facebook there, Rob, and there is a road sign that says slaves escaping. It's got a and it's got a man and a woman dragging a child, and they look like they're running pretty quick.
Well, it used to be there were a number of places in Halifax and Detroit, across Niagara Falls, I believe there was a number of escape routes, and I forget what they called it. The Northern Railway, I believe, is what it was referred to.
It was called the Underground Railway.
That's it.
Yeah, fugitive slave is basically a person running away from their oppressor. That's the legal definition. So you want to think about that, because most people think they're persons, and if you're running away from a government, that makes you a fugitive slave. And the bondsman.
And you know there is a lot of reason to have hope. I mean, all we have to do is look at what happened in Iceland. The EU wanted to come in and apply austerity measures because of the banking fraud committed in Iceland by the bankers, and they all rejected it. They kicked out Parliament. They are making now a new constitution for themselves. They hired a headhunter to go up and get all these bankers, ran away, tried to leave Iceland. They hired a bounty hunter to go out and bring them, drag them back by their ears, and they are facing charges now. So it's not like we can't do it, because when you think about it, these are Icelanders doing this, for Pete's sake. I mean, their national dish is a fish pickled in lye. I mean, they're like New Zealanders addicted to porn. Clearly, we have the power.
By the way, there's no difference between Icelanders being like New Zealanders addicted to porn, because New Zealanders addicted to porn anyway. I just thought I'd throw that in there just quietly.
My point is that there is potential, there is room for us to commit all or to cause all sorts of positive change. One of the things that we're working on is the Association of Canadian Consumer Purchasers. And what I have found in analyzing these acts and statutes, I'm often of the opinion that the remedy is in there, but it's a matter of finding it. And what they do to a degree is try to hide that remedy in so many words and in their legalese. But what I have found is in the Bills of Exchange Act, because this is a commonwealth, essentially when it all boils down to it, we are all owners of the country within which we are domiciled. And because of that, we have a right to the wealth of the country, either in the form of dividends or with the power simply to tap into the commonwealth. And what I have found is that in Canada, we actually have the right and the power. Well, I'd say we have the right now, but we haven't yet seized and exercised the power to spend money into circulation for consumer purchases of consumer goods. When it comes to very specific purchases of things which are consumed, a restaurant meal is an ideal example. We have the power, when presented to the bill, to sign it, mark it consumer purchase, and then sign it and give it back to the proprietor. And that now becomes an instrument of value that they can deposit along with their cash receipts, which the bank must then take to the Bank of Canada, and they recognize the consumption and they monetize it. And that is our source of revenue within ourselves that is not in any way created by outside banks. There is no insurance or no interest attached to it, and it ensures that everyone, it doesn't matter if they try to constrict the money supply, we still have our ability to do this and to inject money into the supply merely by our exchanges. And what this generates is, instead of our exchanges and our ability to engage in exchange being a function of how much money is in circulation, how much money in circulation becomes a function of our exchanges.
I'd say very little. And in fact, what's happening, I think cash flow and currency are kind of like terms that I see like water, you know, like the cash must flow, the currency has a current like a river, and it's not anymore. It's turning into a whirlpool that simply sucks all the money down into one person's or one group of ruling elite's pockets, and everybody else is simply caught in that whirlpool, spinning around and around, and merely waiting for the end when they disappear forever.
I understand, Vinny, but what I'm trying to point out is that we actually have remedy here and now available to us that allows us to inject more money into circulation and always have our basic fundamental needs met by us simply signing the demand for payment and saying, this is your payment, because I'm tapping into the commonwealth and I'm generating the revenue necessary for that. I'm spending money into circulation. And the government used to do that all the time for public works. They wouldn't make a bond and float a bond on the market, which someone then gives them, just creates money out of thin air for, and then pays interest on. That demand for interest is what is sucking us dry. And you can see it in the standard of living. You can see, I mean, hungry homeless people are walking by restaurants that are closing for lack of business. You have people who are hungry, people who want to feed them, and there is no mechanism there for the exchange to take place. But that's because none of these people read the Bills of Exchange Act and find out that the mechanism is, in fact, right there. And I think that's one of our biggest problems. We get overwhelmed with the amount of the acts and the regulations. We fail to read and study them or find our remedy. And we end up struggling under that burden.
It is. Basically, the legal system turns us into beasts of burden to a large degree. And I think that the solution here is by no means a simple one, because it's taken a significant amount of time, effort, and research on your part in order to get to this point. But the fact is you've actually blazed the trail to a degree, so now it's becoming a lot easier for other people to catch up on the work that you've done without having to basically jump through all the loops and hurdles, those possible sidetracks of the maze are now being closed off one by one. Perhaps in future, becoming a free man on the land might be a relatively simple and straightforward process.
Well, it should be. I think people should be becoming peace officers and freemen when they're 18 years of age. They should be waking up and demanding their wealth, their certificates. They should be making an oath to their communities that they will preserve and maintain the peace, operate in a manner that is neither harmful nor damaging nor fraudulent, and be granted all of the freedoms that our ancestors fought, killed, and died for. And we should be exercising those.
It seems that that would need to be instilled from a very, very young age. In fact, if there was perhaps a midwifing freeman service or something of that nature, if you want your child to be born and born safely and born free, you know, without the birth certificate or any of that other kind of stuff that you don't want your child to be enslaved by, here's the freeman midwife service or something of that nature, like a freeman kindergarten, a freeman high school, etc. Would it need to be like that, or would the parents simply have a little bit of awareness?
If you were to look back to the 1900s, you would find that 16-year-olds knew all of this stuff. They knew when joint venture was created. They knew what contract was. They knew the importance of their education.
Okay. Well, we'll be right back after the break, ladies and gentlemen, and we'll learn a little bit of something more from Rob Menard and Peter Ross Valentine at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. You can join us in the chat room. Search Vinny Eastwood chat room. Should be able to find it. Back in a minute.
Prince and Fiat currency exposing scalpers. Something that the mainstream media doesn't do anymore because they've all been bought off. Fairfax Media is owned by giant conglomerates, and they brainwash you constantly with all sorts of bollocks.
Yep. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Big Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And, towards the final segments of the show, if I remember, I try to ask my guests a specific question. Now, this question is kind of generalized, and it's a fishing question for a very good reason, because you don't want to know what the answer to your questions are going to be. Otherwise, it's pretty boring, isn't it? But it's about self-censorship. You know how we know a whole lot of things, and most things we can say without any fear of repression or judgment or people just going, oh, come on, bro. I mean, I've listened to you for all the rest of that stuff, but that's just one too far. You've said that. You've said 999,000 things that I've agreed with so far, but you've just said that one thing that's going to make me switch off and never listen to you again. That kind of self-censorship, because you know that there's an audience out there who might not comprehend you. And a radio show host or interviewer who might judge you. So I offer activists and people of like mind the opportunity on this show to say whatever the heck you want. And if there's anything that you'd like to say, here's the audience that I can pretty much guarantee will comprehend you. And this is the host that won't judge you. So Rob, Peter, if you've got anything to say, go for your life.
Go ahead, Pete.
Oh, you go first. what's there to say other than what's already been said? Just before the break, we were talking about, Rob was mentioning when people reach the age of 18, they should be able to claim their bond or whatever it was. People might be questioning, well, where does that come from? And at the opening of the show, Vincent was talking about chattel, and we're all cattle and kind of slaves and being, you know, shorn like sheep. Well, it's kind of not that bad, but it is. And just like a farmer, right, who might have, say, 300 cows, those 300 cows are worth a certain amount of money because on the open market they're valued as such. They produce milk, maybe, right, which you can collect every day. And so the farmer goes to the bank and he's like, you know, want to borrow some money, and the bank says, well, how many CAS have you got, right? So he can only borrow on how much chattel he has, how much cattle he's got. So it's the same as the governments with the people, and when they get registered at birth, the government's constantly borrowing money from the banks. And this is what we need to realize, is that when you are born and registered, there is a bond created between you and the government, right? And a fiction is created, a legal fiction, which only exists on paper, but it's the capitalized version of you. It's a digital image of you. It's a digital likeness. It's not real. You are the real thing. But anyway, the government says, hey, look, I've got another 10,000 of these cattle. These cows were born, you know, and they're going to grow into big, you know, steaks and pints of milk. Well, the government then borrows more against it. The banks see these, right? And they take these bonds because they know, oh, yeah, I know, you know, you're worth a certain amount of money. And this is where it comes from. When you reach the age of reason, or the age of 18, whatever comes first, you should be able to look at your farmer, you know, the guy in charge, and go, well done, you've done some really good stuff with the money that you borrowed against us. Now I'm taking my security, my bond back, and I control my dividend, because we're all shareholders. I mean, if the country is a car, who do you think the engine is? You know, because you're not steering where it goes, you know. You're not the one steering it. You're the one moving it, you know. So think about it. And that's what we're trying to do, is educate and wake people up to the idea that not everything is as you may think it is.
And we should be steering it as well. I mean, it's, when it all boils down to it, it's our country, it's our resources. We're all human beings on this piece of rock orbiting a giant fire in the sky. These people have no greater inherent right to the wealth and the resources, nor do they have a fundamental right to administrate it on our behalf. We consent to it, and then they use those funds. Well, so many people are struggling and going hungry, and yet they find the money and the resources to build a war machine and try to expand their empire on the other side of the planet. This is just wrong.
Additional plug as well, which is which we're giving away an entire collection of Rob's work in digital format. So all his movies, like The Magnificent Deception and Bursting Bubbles of Government Deception, and all the books he's written as well in a digital format, plus a whole load of other stuff. And we actually sell that on our shop at on our website on worldfreemansociety.org. And it's worth about $90 Canadian, which is, at the moment, I believe, nearly 200 US. So the Canadian dollars, they're stronger than the US dollar. So I've got a book for your listeners, and I'll give them, I don't know, got an hour or something.
I sure could use a little bit of help right now, because I really want my computer back. I've been working on a new book called Hello and Good Day, and it's a series of letters to people in positions of authority, asking them specific questions. It's a number of essays gathered from the web from other people, and it's explaining what the problem that I see with the five main problems, and potential ways for us to address them. And all of that is on my computer. I was ready just to assemble it pretty much now, and my computer died at the worst possible time. So, folks, if you do appreciate my efforts, I could really use a couple of donations to get my computer back up and running. But if not, I understand.
How much do you reckon you need, Rob? $3,000-$4,000?
Well, to do a proper action the way I'd like, to demonstrate that I have the level of public support that I would like, because I know exactly what they're going to do. The very first thing they will try is to claim that it's vexatious or frivolous or not in the public interest, and therefore I need to be able to demonstrate that enough people in the public are aware of this, and instead of just one loudmouth funny guy coming up and asking for this judicial determination, it's backed by the express will of 1,000 to 10,000 people. That gives me an ability to thwart any attempt they would have to shut me down right at the beginning.
I was talking dollars, mate. How much cash do you need? $3,000, $4,000, to get a new computer and all the stuff that you need?
No, to fix my computer, I'd need about $300,
$400?
Yeah, to do the action properly, I would need, I'm thinking minimum 10. I'd like to have about $100,000 to go out and pitch some big-name lawyers out here and be able to piece them off and to ensure that this is a successful action in court. I see the need for the action. I see the need to use the courts. I see roughly how it should be done. I've been doing the research. If necessary, I'll do it myself on pennies and dimes. I think it's important, and it'd be a far greater chance of success if I did get a good lawyer involved and sick them on it. You know, I mean, there are lawyers out there who have secured injunctions before. They specialize in it. There are people who look at sovereignty and international law and could determine whether or not this action that they're trying to engage in is, in fact, lawful. I'm quite certain it's not. I mean, when you look at it, for the Americans to cross the border dressed as they do with arms, come in and arrest a Canadian who may or may not have been fleeing their jurisdiction for criminal, fleeing it for other reasons, they're either peace officers or they're not. If they're not, then they have absolutely no rights. They're bound by the criminal code, and they are an invading force of criminal thugs. I don't care what status they enjoy in the States. Once you cross that line, dressed like that, with that intent, with no peace officer status, you're just a thug, and you're breaking the criminal code. So the only thing that the federal government could do is to hire them as peace officers, and then that brings in the question about whether or not they are in contravention of the Immigration Act and the Employment Standards Act and the certain acts which are applicable, which allow people from the States to come up here and be engaged in short-term employment. You find a lot of performers and entertainers who are allowed, but they sign on, and there is a claim made that they and only they can perform this function. Now, it makes sense for an artistic performer because that's their whole thing. But when it comes to cops arresting people, that claim, if supported by the police, they might as well, you know, stick an ice cream cone in their eye and make funny noises, because they're claiming that they are incapable of doing the job that these American peace officers are doing on our territory. It's ludicrous, fundamentally, and it's a huge danger, because once they're here, I guarantee you they will expand it. They'll say, oh, it's only good within 2 kilometers of the border, and then they'll say, oh, we need to go to 10, then 50, then 100. What percentage of the Canadian people live within 100 kilometers of the border? 80%, probably, something pretty close to that. And then they'll start claiming that, oh, an investigation is a type of pursuit they were pursuing by means of investigation, and before you know it, the whole kit and caboodle is gone, and Canada is turned into a police state, even worse than the States, because the people enforcing will be Americans and will lack the immunity connection that we rely upon now with our constabulary. We've got to put a stop to that. So if there are anyone out there, I mean, even if you're an American and you think, oh, well, this is good for us because it's Americans operating on Canadian soil. It's not. We're the place you run to when your country goes to hell and you've got to escape. We've got to keep that escape route open for you.
Yeah, that's right. The Underground Railroad to the North must stay open at all costs. Rob Menard, ladies and gentlemen, Peter Ross Valentine, you can check them out at worldfreemansociety.org. And if you also support the Vinnie Eastwood Show and bringing on such diverse and fabulous people such as these guys, please go to thevinnieeastwoodshow.com and give us a donation. There's a bank account number there if you don't want to use a credit card. And also subscribe for $5 a month or $10 a month, $20 a month, however much you need, because it's a constant job that I've got here, and I need an income to make sure that I can keep this radio show going every day and the top YouTube channel reporting the news
in
New Zealand. Coming up next is Soul Journeys Radio with Christy, and we'll see you again sometime, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much.